Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I'd like to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not so new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to say that there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Today, I want to talk about Jingle Bell Rock. First, about the song. Bobby Helms first recorded and released it in 1957. He actually re-recorded it many times over the years in 1965, 1967, 1970, and 1983, and possibly more. While that first version is the most well-known, the others do show up from time to time, which is why the one your local radio station plays might sound just a little different than the one you remember. Jingle Bell Rock was a hit on the charts for Bobby Helms in 1957. 40 years later, just before he passed away, it was high on the charts again. And just this past Christmas season, Bobby Helms' version of Jingle Bell Rock hit the top 10 in at least 15 countries. The song has also had chart success with Hall & Oates, George Strait, and Rascal Flatts, just to name a few. I like Jingle Bell Rock, and I like many of the cover versions that have come out in the 65 years since it was first released. That said, it has recently been brought to my attention that in many of the interviews I've done on this podcast, I have mentioned Jingle Bell Rock in an unflattering light, as if someone could either record a good Christmas song or Jingle Bell Rock. I don't think I ever actually said it like that, and if that's how it came across, I apologize, as that was not my intent. I often talk to singers and musicians about the Christmas music they've recorded and the process they went through. And from time to time, I've mentioned that some artists seem to just throw a Christmas song out there almost like they're obligated to do it. And instead of a well-produced original or heartfelt tribute to a classic, something that is just bursting with Christmas spirit, you get a stale version of Jingle Bell Rock. When I've said that, I was usually using the song Jingle Bell Rock as a representative of any classic Christmas song. My intent was not to slander Jingle Bell Rock, and again, if I have, I apologize for that too. I was simply trying to convey that some artist, whether it's due to pressure from a record label or a PR guy or an agent or a manager or something else, they seem to toss out a Christmas song that is a boring copy of the original. There's nothing to show that the artist in question has made the song their own, putting their own spin on it, and instead, we get an almost note-by-note copy of somebody else's song. There's no feeling in it, no sense of that Christmas magic. For example, in the early 80s, Daryl Hall and John Oates recorded their version of Jingle Bell Rock. They actually recorded two versions, one with the lead sung by Daryl and one with the lead sung by John. When it was released as a 45, one side said Merry Christmas from Daryl, and the other was Merry Christmas from John, each accompanying their versions of the song, of course. They didn't completely remake the song, but it was definitely a Hall & Oates song, and they conveyed that seasonal feeling on it, which has made their version popular enough to still get significant airplay on traditional radio stations nearly 40 years after they released it. Lots of artists, producers, PR people, and record labels send me Christmas music every year, and many versions of Jingle Bell Rock come across my desk or fill my email inbox. I have been surprised over the years when I would listen to one and then have to check and see who it was by, because there was nothing special about it, nothing to make me realize it was a certain singer or a particular band. And that's the kind of thing I have talked about many times with many artists. When I'm listening to something and trying to decide if I'm going to play it on the Sounds of Christmas station, one of the things I listen for is that little bit of Christmas magic. Is the singer really enjoying singing this song? Do they believe the words they're singing? Am I convinced they feel that it's a swell time to go riding on a one-horse sleigh? Obviously, I can't really know that. And professional singers and musicians should be good enough to make it sound convincing, even if they don't really feel like it's a bright time at all. But a lot of the time, you can tell when there's just no heart in it. When you're surprised to find out who was singing that song, because it didn't really sound like them at all. And then you forget about it completely shortly after you've heard it. There have been over 400 versions of Jingle Bell Rock that have been recorded and released since Bobby Helms gave us that first one in 1957. I have 138 versions in the Sounds of Christmas library. Kelly Clarkson and Kristen Chenoweth recorded two of the versions I added this past Christmas, though Kristen's was actually kind of a medley with Everybody's Waiting for the Man with the Bag. I'm not going to mention the names of any of the artists I think phoned in a Christmas music release last year or in years past. That would just be my opinion anyway, and we all love different versions of different Christmas songs for a wide variety of reasons. You might even love one of the ones that I don't. Since I'm starting to schedule some interviews with singers and musicians for the upcoming season, and since I will no doubt say this kind of thing again, I wanted to explain where I was coming from as far as Jingle Bell Rock goes. And despite what it might sound like, I really do like Jingle Bell Rock. When I started to do some research on this song, I came across a lot of information that I didn't previously know, and it presents quite a story of controversy and tragedy, which most would not associate with Jingle Bell Rock. So I thought I would ask someone who knew more about it than I did to join me for a conversation about the story of Jingle Bell Rock. In my research, I came across a couple very interesting articles written by John O'Leary that chronicle much of what happened, or what may have happened, or what probably happened. So I reached out to John to get him to join us and talk about the controversy surrounding Jingle Bell Rock. Hi, John. I came across this story that I didn't know about the songwriting and the aftermath. And I found such great information on your website that was why I reached out to you. You had mentioned something about a book that you were working on. Is that still in the works? Or
boy, that's my blog was started in 2007. And it was based around this book I was working on, and at the time I was on I was taking some time off from my consulting career to work on the book. And then I finally finished it, and a couple of publishers liked it, but McGraw-Hill was all set to go with it, but they said I didn't have a strong enough internet platform. So in other words, I had to nowadays book publishers want you to promote the book.
Right. Yes.
So I did, and I had put in, you know, years at that point, and then I got busy with other stuff with my consulting career. And then I thought I'd get back to the book, but now I've gotten busy with my music career. So the book is there, you know, it's 80,000 words, and I'll return to it at some point.
Okay.
But the blog carries the spirit of it, which is Business Lessons from Rock.
Right.
.com, and it's about what we can learn about business and about business teams, which are rock and roll bands and business teams, what we can learn about all of that from rock and roll.
Well, there is plenty to learn about what happened to Bobby Helms and Hank Garland with Jingle Bell Rock. I don't want to dive right in without sort of introducing you. There's a little bit of information on your website about you, that you had a promising academic career that you tossed to get into music, and yes, you moved.
The Beatles came along, and that just like threw everything off, you know.
You opened for the Grateful Dead, Joni Mitchell, Sly and the Family Stone, some really impressive names early on. And then you went to L.A. and you shared the stage with almost a who's who of pop music and rock and roll, dozens of Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. And from there into management consulting, executive training, team coaching, music became the weekend thing, and this new venture took center stage. You worked with AT&T, Cisco Systems, Lockheed Martin, Pfizer, the U.S. Army, just to name a few. Lots of big names there. And all this stuff is available to anybody who wants to see it on your website, businesslessonsfromrock.com. And I love this. It says on there that HR World has called it one of the top 100 management and leadership blogs. And you responded with, well, at least I know there must be 100 of them then. Thanks so much for joining me to talk about this. I feel like rushing through your bio, I probably missed a step or two. Is there anything that you'd want to mention that I left out, got wrong, or just glossed over?
No, just in summary, my life has been I've been just crossing back and forth between identities as a performer, singer, songwriter, and as a management consultant, coach, counselor, and as a writer, author, blogger. So there are some days I wake up and I don't know who I am.
So people who have listened to this podcast are thinking, well, this is very interesting, but what does this have to do with Christmas music and Jingle Bell Rock? Well, almost 10 years ago now, you posted a blog called Jingle Bell Robbery, which detailed the business side of the song and the battle over songwriting credit and royalties. And then a few years later, you followed that up with information from Hank Garland's brother that presents, for lack of better words, a conspiracy theory around what happened between the Nashville music power, Bobby yep. Helms, Hank Garland, and Jingle Bell Rock. Can you sort of take us down this road?
Sure. As you see from my latest blog post, I'm not really a conspiracy theorist in general, but there's some really intriguing aspects to the story. It's completely believable to me because I've heard about it from so many other artists who surrendered a copyright. They wrote a song and it got away from them and they got no credit. And I on my blog, that's a theme that I return to with the Dave Clark Five, Roberta Flack, Roberta Flack's producers getting credit for Killing Me Softly when the idea came from a Lori Lieberman, a songwriter. There's a bunch of examples like that. But the best example and the most costly I can think of is the Jingle Bell Rock controversy, because it's just been a gazillion seller over the years. Right.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And in 1957, they recorded it. And this story briefly is that their producer or the A&R guy at Decca Records, Paul Cohen, told Bobby Helms, you got to record this song. It's a great song called Jingle Bell Hop. And Bobby came in off the road to do it. And he and the studio guitarist at the session, Hank Garland, they said this song is crap, and they completely rearranged it. New lyrics, new melody, new structure to the song, new bridge. And the only thing remaining from the original song was the line Jingle Bell Hop, or the Jingle Hop. The Jingle Hop has begun. But what often happens with musical artists, especially in the 50s, but even now, so many musicians don't know about the business angle of performing, and especially songwriting and intellectual property. So it took them, I think it took a while for them to realize that their name, that they wrote, that Garland and Helms wrote the song, or substantially wrote the song, and wrote most of the song, but their name wasn't on the singles going out. And Bobby, I think they were a little bit late to the ball game and complaining about it, because it's harder to do it a couple of years later than to make a stink in the moment.
Right.
And Bobby, I don't know the personalities involved here, except that from what I've read, Hank Garland was somebody that you don't mess with. And finally, he got to be a very cranky feature on the Nashville scene because of what he alleged corruption in Nashville. And I think probably more than just about this record. And so that put him in, I think that put him in the crosshairs. And he was driving along 4 years later along the highway, and he was shot at. And he said his car, they shot the tires, and he had a near fatal car accident. He was in a coma, and he said that there were bullet holes in the windshield, and he never regained. He lived for until 2004, I think, but he never regained his flexibility with his fingers. He could play a little bit, but he never regained his studio greatness. And for those who don't know, Hank Garland was considered the top Nashville guitar picker. And he still is. It's funny, just now, like 10 minutes ago, I looked on the site for top Nashville guitar players. And Chet Helms was in the top five. James Burton, who did stuff with Elvis Presley, was in the top five. But number one was Hank Garland.
Wow.
And Hank did stuff with Elvis. He played on the Bye Bye Love and Wake Up Little Susie for the Everly Brothers. He's got an incredible, his resume. And he played on the other song that to me, the two classics of that era for kind of rockabilly Christmas classics would be Jingle Bell Rock and Brenda Lee's
Rocking Around the Christmas Tree.
Right. And sometimes I get the songs mixed up because I perform with my goddaughter and at Christmas time, we do some of these songs, we rock them up. And we would keep getting the songs mixed up. And we realized that Hank plays in both of them. I mean, it's Hank's guitar player that makes them both great, I think. Plus, they both, Brenda Lee, at the age of, I think she was 13 or 14 at the time. She, you know, that's a great vocal on Rocking Around the Christmas Tree. I mean, it's a classic. But so is Bobby Helms. I mean, those are two great, great, distinctive, catchy vocal tracks, right?
Oh, yeah. I know Jingle Bell Rock has been covered hundreds of times by other artists. And the same is true for Rocking Around the Christmas Tree. And I know when I first came across this story that suggested conspiracy and all this, the first thing you think of is, well, this is sour grapes from these guys because they didn't know what they were doing, or they're just complaining later. But when you look into it, and you can find pictures where they show you Hank Garland's car, and you can see bullet holes, and it's never exactly explained why he was given electroshock therapy constantly over and over again after this accident, right, which left him a shell of who he was. And you look at Bobby Helms, and Bobby Helms had a couple number one hits. He was riding high on the country charts with other songs, and he never had another one after this. There's no way to prove so many years later that he was blackballed, but it seems really odd that he would have so much success and then all of a sudden nothing after complaining about this record.
Yeah, and obviously an uber talented fellow, but he never got back to his glory days. And he did have, actually both of them did make money. I mean, Hank, I don't know how much money Hank saved, but in the couple of years before his car accident, he was the studio musician in Nashville. So he made money off his sessions, but that, you know, dried up after his accident. Bobby Helms still made money off of performances, and he made money off of Jingle Bell Rock as a performer of the song, but not as a songwriter.
Right.
And big money, you know, with radio play, really is the songs. I mean, he lost just tens of millions of dollars.
Sure. Well, and like I had said a minute ago, that there have been hundreds, I think I had seen 408 versions so far of Jingle Bell Rock. And that's all these other people performing it, that's a slice of that would go to the songwriter. And right. Bobby Helms didn't get any of those 408 pieces.
Right.
I mean, he's not with us anymore. I think he passed away about 25 years ago in that ballpark.
99. I think it was 1999 or 1997.
Yeah, mid to late 90s, I think. But he and Hank Garland both went their whole lives, never changing a word of this story, that this was what happened to them.
Yep.
And the guys who were credited with the songwriting for Jingle Bell Rock, I think they had been in newspaper or advertising or something, but their names don't show up on any other song since then.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, Jim Beal and Joe Beal and Jim Booth.
Yeah.
Get the full credit for that.
And but somehow they had this monster song that they wrote and never another one. I mean, one hit wonders aren't that unusual, but it seems odd that these guys who were not in the music business would write a giant best-selling song and no follow-up, no anything ever again. Very weird. You had mentioned to me another story about another song, as long as I've got you here, a songwriting story behind Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Yeah, that's interesting to me on two fronts. One is Hugh Martin, I believe. Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine wrote a lot of songs together. But for this particular song, Hugh wrote it himself. And he's not particularly bitter about it. He's just like, that was dumb of me to say that Ralph wrote it, you know, because they shared the copyright on that for years. So that was a lot of money that Hugh Martin gave up. But, you know, he said, I don't know if he's still alive, but in his interviews, he always credits Ralph Blaine, and he doesn't seem too bothered by that. But a more interesting aspect of that is the fact that he had to substantially rewrite the song for Judy Garland's Meet Me in St. Louis.
Yeah.
It was the movie that birthed the song. And I don't know if you've ever discussed this on your show, but that song has the first version of it is like unbelievably dismal.
Yeah, so depressing.
Yeah, can I just read a little of it?
Yeah, please.
The original is, "Have yourself a merry little Christmas. It may be your last. Next year, we may all be living in the past. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Pop that champagne cork. Next year, we may all be living in New York." Now, the version, they told him that Judy Garland thinks it's depressing. You're going to have to rewrite it. And he resisted. And I'm thinking, you know, as I'm reading about this, somebody's got to tell him that as a songwriter, you don't give up an opportunity like this, right?
Yeah.
And be flexible. Well, in the end, he was. But anyway, in the rewritten version, "Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year, all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gain. Next year, all our troubles will be miles away." And so on and so on. It's hard that such a good songwriter could write such a depressing lyric this first time through. But fortunately, it was changed. And what I'm fascinated by is actually went through some more revisions, because it went from a really depressing song that no one ever really heard to Judy Garland's version, which is sad but hopeful, because they're looking toward the future when things will be better. And this was during World War II, when families were ripped apart and they could only hope for when the war was over.
Right.
And I think people, I'm kind of an amateur historian, I think people underestimate what World War II was like. I mean, it was before I was born, but I knew lots of people who lived during it, obviously. And, you know, it sounds like a great patriotic saga, but it was just the most traumatic thing that's ever happened to this country, probably. Well, the Civil War, but I mean, when you think of, I mean, we only lost a couple hundred thousand in the war, but I mean, tens of millions of people died in the war. And most families were affected by it. So I think that this song captures some of the sadness of the war years. And subsequent attempts to, it went from a dismal song to a hopeful song, and then a happy song when Hugh Martin made some more corrections for Frank Sinatra. And that was one of those lines, instead of "we'll have to muddle through somehow," was changed to hang a shining star upon the highest bough.
Yeah, for Frank's Jolly Christmas album.
Yeah, but then there is a version of Sinatra singing the older words. So you'll hear many different versions of this song. But I also have a theory, and this is getting a little bit far out, but I think songs retain the DNA from when they're first written. And I think that there's a sadness to the song that's a little bit confusing, because in the Judy Garland version and the subsequent versions, it gets happier. But I think the sadness is still in the melody. So to me, it's a really sad, I love it. I mean, I think it's one of the greatest songs ever written, but I always have a lump in my throat when I hear it. "Have yourself a merry little Christmas" gives it away. That little sarcastic line left over from the beginning, from the origins of the song, kind of leaps, leaks through. So to me, it's as a songwriter, it's kind of a lesson about songs kind of almost have a mystical quality. And when they're written, there's something, well, it, maybe not that mystical, it might be just because of the melody and the chords, but it retains something that subsequent versions can't extinguish.
Yeah, for me, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas has always seemed like a song that basically says, hang in there, things are going to get better. So it just kind of acknowledges right away that you're having a tough time right now, but it's going to get better.
Right.
Hang in there. And that's from Judy's version all the way up to the ones that came out this past December.
Well, there's a couple of versions that I think are that even further, I don't have them in front of me, but they try to make it present tense, and we're happy now.
Yeah, it's certainly a nice sentiment.
Yeah,
but I still think it still carries that it's going to be okay. It's not okay right now, yeah, but it's going to be.
Yeah. Well, there's very few great classic songs that don't have optimism in them. And even songs like the saddest song that that I perform with my goddaughter is "Send in the Clowns," the classic show tune, and it has to end with maybe next year instead of the clowns are here and we're the clowns, which is how it ends, the second verse is. So a good songwriter wants to have happy endings and look to the future.
And while there have been sad Christmas songs over the years, none of them last. None of them have the staying power. Nobody wants to have that. They want the hope, or they want to be happy now. So I think that's one of the reasons, too, that you see Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas continue to sort of evolve to that everything's going to be all right. Maybe everything is all right.
Right. Right.
Any last thoughts on these Christmas songs or anything else?
It's just a reminder that I should actually try to write a Christmas song. I mean, that if you've ever, I go through every year, I go through the Christmas songs to see which ones that I want to perform. And I'm stunned at the volume of them. I mean, there are hundreds of them. I mean, you think, there's 20 classics. And then you say, no, there's actually about 40. There's about eight. You know, it just keeps going. And they keep getting written.
Oh, yeah. There are probably, for my online Christmas music station, The Sounds of Christmas, I get probably hundreds, if not 1,000 Christmas songs sent to me every year, whether it's from artists or record labels or PR people. Wow. And I am never able to listen to all of them, even past the Christmas season. And not all of them are good enough. They're not polished enough. They're not quite where they want to be. But there is a ton of it that comes out every year. Every year.
Yeah, it's amazing. Do you have a particular, is there one particular favorite Christmas song of yours?
Not constant. It changes. I really like, I always come back to Leroy Anderson's Sleigh Ride, because I was in band in school and we played that every year. And all the other songs that we would play for our Christmas or winter concert, whatever you're going to call it, those would all change from year to year. But Sleigh Ride was always part of the program. So wow. From seventh grade through my senior year in high school, every December, we played Sleigh Ride. So that always has a special place for me.
That's great. It's great.
How about you? Are there any particular standouts for you?
Well, as far as Jingle Bell Rock is the one that every time, I just played it about 15 minutes ago in preparation for this, or a half hour ago. And I was, even then I picked up something. I mean, it's so simple. How can you pick up on something 50, 60 years later? But I did. The Anita Kerr Singers are flawless. They're impeccable. And then they sing a verse, and then with contrary motion. I mean, that, as I've put it on my blog, that song is constructed like a Swiss watch. Every part is, everything about it is brilliant. So if I get into analytical mode, I go to that song because the arrangement of it is so perfect as a track, as a record. But I think Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is my favorite Christmas song.
Any particular version?
Oh, Christina Perry. Have you heard her?
Yes. I like her a lot.
With just a minimalist piano behind her. And she sings it and she smiles. I haven't seen it, but I've heard it. And I can tell she's smiling when she sings certain words. It's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
That's the kind of thing that really does it for me when I'm listening to new Christmas music and deciding whether I'm going to play it or not. Do I hear that little bit of magic in there? Do I hear that the artist is smiling, that they feel like they believe what they're singing? And you can't always tell. You can't always know that. Some of them are real pros and maybe they can turn that on and off. But sometimes you can feel that. That's how I got down this Jingle Bell Rock rabbit hole in the first place, because some of them, there was an artist, and I won't mention their name, but there was an artist who threw out a version of Jingle Bell Rock this past year, and it was so obvious that they did it in minimal takes just to do it and get it done. It was like exactly as long as Bobby Helms' version. It didn't add anything. Guitar player wasn't as good as Hank. I don't think there were any backup singers. It was just sort of going through the motions, phoning it in. And you listen to that and you listen to like Christina Perry, and it's a world of difference because you can just feel that emotion in the song. It just makes such a difference.
That's sacrilegious when somebody does an abominable version of a great song. Sacrilegious.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's just flavorless. It's so obviously that they're throwing out a Christmas song because somebody made them or suggested it, or they're thinking this is a way to make a buck. And people are so much more savvy now about that kind of thing, that when you listen to it, whether you're listening to it on some streaming service or you actually have found a hard copy of a CD or a record and you listen to it, people can tell now.
Yeah.
People get it when you're faking it or when you're real.
Yep.
And that's something you can't teach. Thanks so much, John. The website, again, is businesslessonsfromrock.com. Is there any other place that people can find you, or is that the best place?
Oh, that's the best place. I have a lot of music on YouTube. If people Google John O'Leary and my goddaughter, Abigail Arndt. Abigail is spelled as you would expect, and Arndt is A-R-N-D-T, A-R-N-D-T. So John O'Leary and Abigail Arndt. We have a lot of stuff on YouTube. We play outside. We play on the street. In the summer, in the Boston Public Garden is a beautiful place, and that's where to find us.
Do you have stuff that's available for streaming yet?
We're about to put up a song I wrote on Spotify that'll be available in a few weeks.
Cool. We'll definitely be checking that out. John, thanks so much for joining us.
I loved it. Loved it.
Thanks so much for listening, helping me share a little Christmas spirit, and for helping this podcast continue to grow. Since you're listening to this now, you've obviously found us somewhere. But if there's another site you like to use for podcasts, check out our podcast page on our website for the complete list of everywhere you can listen to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. And the website is soundsofchristmas.com. Then just click on the podcast tab. For the Sounds of Christmas station, to listen to the music, you'll just need to stick with our website or our app in the Google Play Store. If you have comments or suggestions, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through our website. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.